Hello, welcome to The Debate. I'm Kobi Tahwaii. How sensitive is the situation in the Gaza Strip? Well, for starters, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, Minister for Military Affairs, Avigdor Lieberman, and the Israeli Army Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Gadi Ashkenaz, just today held assessment of the security situation along the Gaza border at the Israeli Army's Gaza Division headquarters, which is why there are reports that there are plans for an Israeli invasion of the Gaza Strip. Now, in this edition of The Debate, we will look at the dire situation of the Strip as a whole, the Israeli closure of one of its only open crossings, and how the Strip fits in the so-called deal of the century. First, let's bring in our correspondent, Hala Safadi, from the Gaza Strip to tell us more about the situation there. Well, Hala, if you can please tell us, you know, this is now 11 years, the siege, what it's like there. We know also, in terms of the naval blockade, that has been even more restricted. And, of course, the daily urgencies that people in Gaza are facing.
Well, when we're talking about Gaza Strip, as you just said, we're talking about a place that has been under an Israeli blockade, and this blockade includes land, sea, and air blockade for over 11 years now. The blockade has already had its negative effects on this Strip when it comes to the economy, to the healthcare system, to even the social system in Gaza as well. So basically now, Gaza suffers from one of the highest rates of unemployment in the world. We're talking about the unemployment rate that already hits 40%. Also, it suffers from high poverty rates as well. And again, we're talking about a healthcare system that is collapsing. So now, after Netanyahu's administration took the decision of closing the only commercial crossing into Gaza, which is Kerem Shalom crossing, the situation has definitely got worse. So Mr. Jamal Al-Khudri, who is the head of the of breaking the Israeli blockade committee in Gaza, has already stated today that 80% of factories in Gaza has totally shut down or partially shut down after this decision. Now, the 80% of the factories here, we're talking about years of a blockade. Add to that that at least 1,000 items needed in the industry or in the economy in Gaza includes raw material, fuel, gas, cooking gas, and electronic supplies and other important things that are needed for the economy are already banned from entering Gaza right now after Netanyahu's decision. So this has definitely raised the labor layoff. It has raised the poverty rates in Gaza and will continue to raise the poverty rates in Gaza, especially that when factories shut down, employees do not have, or labor does not have alternatives of finding job opportunities in Gaza. We're talking about thousands of graduates who end up jobless in Gaza, even if they are majoring in very important specializations that are deeply needed in Gaza. So basically, the situation is definitely getting worse. Add to that, the fishermen suffering and the fishing industry that is already collapsing after Israel has limited the fishing zone down to 3 nautical miles. And again, we're talking about a sea here that is already polluted. To fish in Gaza and get, let's say, clean fish, you need to go beyond 6 nautical miles. So they're also destroying another industry in Gaza, which is the fishing industry. Gaza is already on the verge of collapse, and if this continues to take place and the closure is not reversed, definitely Gaza will collapse because there is nothing else for Gazans to hold on to.
Thank you very much for that. From the Gaza Strip, of course, wanted there, Hala Safadi. Our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, we have Alan Ben-Meir, who is an author and Middle East peace negotiations expert, who joins us from New York, and also Saeed Mohsen Abbas, a journalist and political commentator, who joins us from London. I'd like to welcome you both. And Saeed Mohsen Abbas, let me start with you. We are on the verge of what at least Israel is indicating from reports coming out of there, that they may go for either a large-scale military, exercise on the Gaza Strip, or by some accounts, invasion. If these the kite launches don't cease, according to the announcement that they have made. This has come out now from multiple sources. We're looking also at how Israel has closed one of the only crossings now, which pretty much, again, puts a complete blockade on the Gaza Strip. What is your reading into these two pieces of news?
Well, they're a continuation of military terrorism, which Israel has exercised in the region for decades, and economic terrorism. Add to that the humanitarian terrorism that results from these two actions, it's business as usual. But actually, I think it shows that Israel is really worried about the resistance. Whatever's going on within Hamas or within that Gazan region, they understand that they've actually made the problem worse by fencing in, cordoning off, blockading 2 million people, a million of whom are children. They've actually just set on fire the emotions and the passion of those individuals. And they've seen that over the Great March of Return. It's not going away, this problem. And the Israeli's government is quite frankly petrified. And the knee-jerk reaction that they're going to have to this so-called kite flying as an excuse to go and militarily, if you like, invade that open-air prison that they call Gaza is just another indication of how fragile and weak the Israelis establishment is.
Alan Bamir, Israel says that these kites are balloons. They are flying over the land. They have burned, by some accounts, large areas of land, and that this needs to be stopped, and therefore that is why they're exercising what they may do tomorrow, which alarm bells are ringing across the Gaza Strip on that. Do you think that Israel has a right to react the way that it is based on these kites that fly over and has burned some acres of land there?
Let me just put this in proper perspective before I answer directly your question. I am personally against the blockade in any fashion or form. However, one has to ask himself the question, what does it take? I want you to assume that Iran is there instead of Israel. And if Hamas continue to this day threaten Israel's very existence and refuses to renounce violence, probably Iran would have acted precisely the same way. Having said that, it takes two to tango, so to speak. What is necessary now is for both sides to calm down and sit down and talk. And I've been advising both sides to sit down and talk face to face to resolve this humanitarian crisis that must not and should not continue. Now, the continuing provocation.
When you talk about both sides, let's make it clear, you're not indicating Iran in that equation, are you?
I am talking about Israel and Hamas.
Great. I just wanted that to be clear. Go ahead.
There's absolutely no reason why they should not be sitting face to face and talk to one another. Neither Gaza is going to disappear, nor Israel is going to disappear. They must face reality, and the reality is they exist. They need to talk to one another. That is what's going to take. The continuing provocation of Hamas, in my view, is a strategy. They are, to some extent, inviting, and I repeat, inviting Israeli incursion because they do not want to continue the siege and Israel invade. They will never accept another ceasefire and will never go back to the status quo ante until there is more permanent solution.
Well, it's interesting, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas. Our guest there, Alan Bamir, starts by saying that that he is against the siege. But then he says that it's Hamas that is provoking Israel. And then he says that, well, you know, what if it was Iran that was in that instead of Israel? And how would Iran react? But let's put things into perspective in another way, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, and that is that you have Israel who says these kites are burning some land, but just in the past months, from the 30th of March on, they have killed 141 Palestinians, injuring 14,000 that are still dying to this day. Land that's being burnt a little bit from a siege that's going on almost 12 years versus the deaths. I think human lives here speak more than land.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. The bottom line is that everything has to be proportionate, and everything that Israel does is disproportionate to the reality of any situation. They are sitting with 400 nuclear warheads, and they're worried about a few kites flying across the border after they've snipered, shot, killed, murdered, maimed over an entire series of months with no real outcry globally. And who's at the heart of this? If we're going back to understand understanding the root cause of the problem. First of all, you cannot have peace without justice. Justice cannot happen unless you actually, first of all, admit the realities of a situation. And this is what Israel is fundamentally not allowing itself to do. The quartet who backed up Israel, i.e. Russia, the EU, the UN, and the US, are all guilty and culpable for the current blockade and what's happening in the situation and the actual atrocity that's happening. They have, on the basis of recognition of Israel, an entity which is illegal by the UN's own, if you like, residence, an entity which has violated every law in international existence in terms of violation of human rights, etc. One that is beyond anybody's accountability in terms of its nuclear proliferation, is actually dictating to the world how human rights should be interpreted. You cannot sit at a table and dialogue with people who are fundamentally tyrants, fundamentally oppressive, have no good intention in their bodies. Just this last couple of days, a minister talking to his own military establishment said in response to the kites, we ought to bomb the children who are flying kites in that region. I mean, this is who you're dealing with. You're dealing with a mindset which wants to bomb with missiles children who might be flying kites. Now, surely the entire Israeli army and its entire defense force, one of the most powerful in the world, totally kitted out with every kind of facility, can manage children with kites without having to resort to an entire invasion or an entire bombing campaign. I don't buy it.
Well, since we're talking about... Would you like a reaction there? Go ahead, Alan Ben-Meir.
Yes, let me just listen. You know, we're talking about proportionality. This is not a question of proportionality. I absolutely disagree with Israel when it uses excessive force. But let us assume for a moment that Israel does not use excessive force. Would that put an end to the conflict? It will not put an end to the conflict. This is going on now for 11 years. The 11 years from today, we'll be sitting again, and we'll probably be talking about the same problem. Hamas, unfortunately, is playing into the hardcore Israelis by continuing to threaten Israel, and they know that's not going to mean much, by continuing to use to resort to violence instead of renouncing it. And in so doing, they play into the hands of the Israeli right of center. And this is exactly what's taking place. If I were the Hamas leader, I would renounce violence, I would declare Hudna for a while, invite the Israelis to come and talk. Let's see, I put Israel on the defensive, but they're not doing so. They continue to pursue policies of 30, 40, 50 years ago, that has gotten the Palestinian absolutely nowhere. I am for two-state solution. I am for ending the blockade. I am for right of the Palestinian. I'm very concerned about the plight of children in Gaza and the West Bank. To me, this is not acceptable. But it takes two to sit down and talk. And so far, the Palestinians have missed many, many opportunities, and that's unfortunate. So you can talk about what's right and what's wrong, but you've got to go to the core issue. And the core issue to this day, Hamas does not want to recognize Israel's very existence, and Israel is doing
what
exactly the same thing. And that is that's going to take us absolutely nowhere, not now, not tomorrow, not in 10 years. And if Israel invades again, we're going to go back in no time to the status quo.
Same as Abbas.
Well, what absolute nonsense. If we're talking about the core of the issue, the core of the issue is the right to self-determination of the Palestinian people. Give them one vote, one person, whoever, Israeli, Zionist, Jew, Muslim, Palestinian, give them all one vote. Anybody connected to the Palestine, there's a gauntlet for you to come down to. Sit on the negotiation table, give everybody who has any stakeholdership within Palestine a democratic right to vote. You go and ask the Israeli fascist institutions whether they will allow the Arabs and the Palestinians of that nation to have one man, one vote for the entire region. No, they won't. They have no intention of giving the Palestinians their true rights. They've taken away whatever minimal land they've given. They treat them like dogs and like animals in a Gazan open-air prison. They restrict their food. They restrict their water. They've contaminated all of their water. Netanyahu sits on videos telling Iran about how great his capabilities of creating water are. are in Israel, and they've got no water shortages. Well, I'll tell you what, the Palestinians have got water shortages because Benjamin Netanyahu can't be bothered to allow water into that area, which is not contaminated. You've got unemployment, as we heard in the report, but even more, you've got this absolute kind of disregard of humanitarian rights of individuals. Mm-hmm. In that climate, it's absolutely understandable that Hamas would say, actually, you know what, the dialogue you've had for 70, 80 years or whatever has got us nowhere. So bomb us, do what you want to do, because we're not going to give up the resistance. If the price is to stand up and fight for our rights, then so be it. We're willing to die with dignity and not have to actually bow in enslavement to a bunch of tyrant oppressors who actually right. don't even belong in that region, but they're there.
Alan Ben-Meir, go ahead.
You know, he characterized what I've just said as nonsense. And I think what I've heard just now is total rubbish. You know why? Because this kind of narrative has been repeated again and again for the last 10, 15, 20 years. I've just come from meeting in Brussels, meeting with Israelis and Palestinians, and exactly I hear the same narrative from both sides. Both sides are guilty of different charges, but both sides are perpetuating a terrible conflict of a major humanitarian disaster. So let's just put aside, you know, who is on whose side. I'm not on side of the Israelis or the Palestinians. I look for a resolution. And for me, a resolution can be found if both sides accept one basic fact. Both exist, and they're not going to go anywhere. That's a fact that no, your guests on the other side okay. cannot change. Which means to solve the problem, you need to sit down and to the one single prerequisite
Got it.
Is first of all say no violence. Let's start talking without violence committed by either side.
Very
That's
well.
Have to begin.
Let me get in here, and I'm going to turn this question to you first, Alan Ben-Meir, then I'll come to you, Saeed Mohsen Abbas. And that is your reaction to why Trump is turning its attention to Gaza, according to this report that came out on J Post and also Haaretz and many other publications, stating that the Middle East so-called deal of the century has collapsed. Do you buy that? And why would Trump turn its attention to Gaza, where it's saying that it wants to improve the livelihoods of people living in Gaza? What angle is there in that?
Well, he knows, and he should know, that there will be no solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict unless you also pay attention to the 2 million, the flight of 2 million in Gaza. This is just a fact. And his so-called peace plan includes, and I know this for sure, includes serious consideration of alleviating the humanitarian disaster in Gaza and incorporating, eventually, creating a unity government between the two sides. I am not sure that's going to work because the conflict between Hamas and the Palestinian Authority is probably as deep as the conflict between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. But let this put this aside. Let me go back to the central theme, be that Trump, or the EU or any other party who wants to get involved in the search for a solution must think in terms of what is going to take. And what is going to take is for both sides to come to their senses that they cannot prevail uh-huh. over each other. And what is going to take okay. is to come to the realization that talk, direct talk, is okay. what's going to lead them to some kind of an understanding.
You know, Saeed Mohsen Abbas, I know you have a reaction, but when our guest there talks, I think it was just today that the Knesset passed a law that enables more land grabbing by the settlers. It also, I think, has passed a law that is going to prevent these human rights organizations, especially from filming what Israeli soldiers are doing in terms of breaking international law when it comes to the way they're violating the Palestinians on the ground and so forth and so on. And not to mention all the illegal settlements that we keep hearing these announcements on. So when our guest there talks about Israel coming to the table, how can the Palestinians take them seriously? And that's the big question right now. How can the PA, along with Hamas, were to be to come to the table based on how the so-called deal of the century is trying to put them together to negotiate? Do you buy this deal, so-called deal
well,
of the century?
Israel, No, there's no deal of the century. There is only one deal that is tenable, and that is a one-state solution with everybody who's got a link, as I repeat, whether they're Zionists, ultra-Zionists, Palestinians, Muslims, Hamas, I don't care, anybody who is a Palestinian who's linked to the Palestinian territories now should get a vote. Democracy is what the West bangs on about, is what Donald Trump bangs on about, is what Israel bangs on about. They keep saying what a great democracy they are. So show us the democracy. Give the Palestinians the right to vote. That's the first thing that has to be on the table. There is no two-state solution. There is no intention on the part of Israel, there never has been, of actually allowing the Palestinians to live in peace and have a stable state. Their whole policy is one of expansionism. It's going to be one of the Yinon plan, actually to violate the Middle East as much as possible. They're in the Middle East. They've been created in the Middle East by imperialist powers in order to create devastation, destruction, and conflict. That is their purpose. And even the Israeli public themselves, who are there, who are citizens, are being taken for a ride because they've been sold this narrative about how everybody hates them and how they're under threat and how they're innocent and how they should all be really pulling our strings for what happened in the Holocaust in the Second World War. These are narratives which are thrown around across the West, which actually ultimately do what? They allow Israel to oppress, kill, murder, maim children. They allow them to starve them. They allow them to kill them through dirty water, through starvation, and through every other means that possible. You cannot talk to a tyrant which is doing that at the same time.
I got to jump in since we're running out of time.
Discussion.
Sorry, Muslim Abbas. Let me give 30 seconds to Alan Bamir in reaction. Go ahead.
Look, let me say something very, very, very basic here, and that is, when you talk about one-state solution, it's non-starter. It's not going to happen. I am against.
Why? Why is it a non-starter?
I am against the settlement. I'm against expropriation of Palestinian land 100%. The two-state solution, however elusive may seem today, it remains the only solution because Israel, under no circumstances, will go for one-state solution because it will immediately lose its Jewish majority. One other point, very briefly, you're talking about Israel. Don't talk about Israel as a country. Talk about the government of Israel. The Netanyahu government, you are right, is not interested in a Palestinian state. But Netanyahu is not going to live forever, and we have to begin to put the building blocks for the future. Netanyahu will disappear.
Okay. I got to jump in and give Sayyid Mohsen Abbas the last talk here. Statements from you, Mohsen Abbas, in closing 30 seconds.
Well, to write off a one-state solution is a classic ploy, you see, of apologists that want to actually clandestinely support the Israeli narrative that only two states is possible, and even that they won't even give it to you. How long has it been before they've even allowed that to happen? Effectively, Israel has a non-negotiation strategy and policy. They will do everything in the way all tyrants do. They will do it to oppress the people, to bully them, to demoralize them, to spread fear, to starve them. This is a fascist regime. It is exactly what it is. It's being exposed by the fact that the Palestinian resistance is standing strong. The minute you weaken in front of this a tyrant or a bully, he gets the opportunity to call the shots and dictate the rest of your life. The Palestinians have more dignity than that, and they are standing up, and that's why Gaza to the world is a testimony to the Israeli barbarity and their actual violence. And in the end, tyrants and barbarians do not last.
We're going to end it there. Thank you. We started with our correspondent, Hala Safadi, from the Gaza Strip, or from Gaza City. Also, Alan Bamir, thank you, author and Middle East peace negotiations expert. And thank you, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Kavitha, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, goodbye.